Do you know what it takes to get your brilliance out there? It can get messy, and it should. I'm Kelly, the founder of Women for One, and I talk to powerful truth tellers and change makers about the experiences that most transform them and help them to make their lives happen on their own terms. So let's dive in to the Messy Brilliance Show. Hi everyone, it's Kelly with Women for One, and today I'm so honored to be speaking with a woman that embodies empowerment and also really represents our new website called, our new tagline, a destination for women to make life happen. And I feel like Tara Moore actually does that. She helps women make life happen, and she gives them very specific tools to do that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today and find out a little bit more about Tara. First and foremost, I like to introduce my guests by talking a little more informally than a bio. I feel like the most important thing in the world is to be a mom for me, so I want to honor that Tara is a mom, and I first saw her speak at Emerging Women Live last October, which was really amazing to see a woman standing in her power that, you know, had just come off having a child and launching a new book. Her new book, she's an author, is Playing Big, Find Your Voice, Your Mission, and Your Message, which is what we're encouraging women to do in 2015 at Women for One. The past several years, we've been talking about women sharing their stories authentically, but let's take it to the next level now. Let's take a step further, look at those stories and how they defined us, release them, and then find some tools to take action in our lives. And that's what we're doing here with Tara today, and I'm honored to have her as our first featured homepage person, woman, empowered woman. So welcome, Tara.
I'm honored too. Thank you for having me.
Very excited. Very excited. So as you heard, Women for One is really about women sharing their stories and releasing those lessons they've learned to create a powerful new vision for their lives. Can you share a little bit with our community about how you created those experiences and started sharing those experiences of your life to teach women to empower themselves?
Mm-hmm. Well, gosh, there's so many points, right, where along the way where I could start that story, but maybe I'll start several years ago. I was working in a job that I liked but didn't love. It was sort of like everything was fine, and nothing was really alive and exciting for me in my work or in my life. And I started to follow the whispers of, like, just what was calling me next. And the vision was not clear for me at all. But I was getting some little whisper that was like, just take a training in a coaching program. That relates to a lot of your interests. Who knows what you'll do with it. But, like, you can do that on the side of your other job. So you don't have to take any big risks. Just go in that direction. And then I went to the coaching training. And, of course, I thought I was doing that for something around coaching, but in the training, the students were always coaching each other. And whenever I was being coached, the thing that kept coming up was this voice that was saying, write, just sit down and write, write. And it was like, write? No, I'm here to, like, maybe become a coach. And what do you mean, write? That wasn't my plan. And I started blogging and writing. And that was where, for me, a lot of the reflecting on stories and lessons learned and falling in love with that process started to happen.
That's great. So that's where you came into your space of understanding what you wanted to do in the future.
Very organically, yeah. Writing and then discovering what did I most like writing about, what were people most resonating with. I also had started coaching on the side of my job. And was coaching women at night and on the weekends. And I was also seeing what themes are showing up there and what am I most able to help them with and what am I most drawn to. And so it was kind of through that mix of things and a very organic discovery process that I landed on, there really is this phenomenon of women playing small. And I am so passionate about us playing bigger. And that wasn't a new theme. I had always been working on women's issues in different ways, but it was the first time I was working on it through this inside out, personal growth. What are the inner barriers we have that hold us back, and how do we change those? It was the first time I was working on it through that lens.
Well, and when you talk about the playing small, obviously we're going to talk about your book, Playing Big. What was the evolution of the book? Where I know that you did some sort of survey, so I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that, because I read about that.
Yeah, so I was coaching women, and you know, I was seeing again and again that my experience as a coach was always the same. Amazing woman shows up in my coaching practice. She's so smart. I'm like falling in love with her capability and her ideas, and she doesn't see any of that in herself. So I was seeing that in my coaching practice, and I was watching. I can see this woman could be the CEO of her organization. She'd be a way better CEO than the person who is the CEO. And yet I'm hearing from her, I haven't thought about that idea long enough. I need 10 more years experience. Being a CEO is full of baggage I don't want. So I was seeing that phenomenon. And then at the same time, I was writing, and I had been blogging, and my audience was growing. And at a certain point, I wanted to know more about them, and so I did a survey. And in the survey, I asked, what's the biggest challenge in your life? So this is women of all different age groups, industries, who are reading my blog. And it was a multiple choice survey, so I listed these different choices of the things that we typically think, right, are the biggest challenges for
right.
women. Definitely work-family balance is up there. Money challenges, stress, I don't know what I want, you know, all this stuff. And then I was kind of like, just on a whim, I'm like, you know, there's something's missing from this list. It's that thing from my coaching practice. Okay, I'm playing small. Some form of I'm playing small. So I put that on the list. And then the survey responses came back. And that was what the most women said was the biggest challenge in their life, was that they were playing small.
So when you say playing small, I mean, what I see is like, I mean, I feel it in me a lot, right? That fear, like, what are some characteristics, because you get very specific in your book, which I love, around playing small that you would define that as? Because it's great that you use that term and everybody gravitated to that.
Yeah. It's sort of like everyone goes, yeah. And then everyone's like, now, what do we mean by that? They're like, no, that's me. And what do we mean by that?
Right.
So it's, I know my dream. I know I've got these like hovering dreams and ideas that keep tapping at my mind of what I am supposed to bring into the world or I want to bring into the world, but I'm not really moving on it. Or like I go to a lecture by an expert or an author and I like see the elephant in the room that person's not talking about, and it's really bothering me that it hasn't been talked about. But I don't put my hand up. And
I don't say it. Yeah, you don't speak it.
Anything.
Right.
Yeah. Or I go to a meeting at work and I'm like, know that the thing that we're supposed to, about our company's about to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in is not a good plan because of something I know. But I'm somehow having trouble really forcefully articulating that. So it's playing small in relation to sharing your voice, your ideas, in relation to going to your dreams. From an outsider's point of view, we can see it's playing small in relation to your capabilities and your talent. It's all of that. And I think it is the reason we intuitively relate to it and we can say we feel that in ourselves is because it is something that we feel. It's like we feel the roads not taken. We walk around with them. We carry that.
I love that. I'm writing that down.
I've never said that before, but I was like,
The road's not taken. I mean, I feel that. Like, I'm writing my book, but it's not taken yet, and I keep, I'm scared, and, you know, it's like, oh, I don't have time, I have kids, I have, you know, it's the limiting beliefs.
Yes, we care about that, so we know. And then when you think about, you know, what just so shocked me when I read the survey responses was this feeling of like, you know, it's like the you know, the all white male panel on CNN and the news and, you know, all the crazy stuff that's going on in our world and all the things going to change. And then all these women like walking around kind of with this lurky, like sneaking sense, like we all know we're playing small. So that's a problem that we got to fix, is that picture, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I love how you define that. And with Women for One, we have an audience all over the world. We have women from every single culture. And I have a strong following in the Middle East. Mm. And what I found was fascinating is that the Middle Eastern women, our American and Western notions of them are they're even more unempowered than we are. I mean, generally. And when I speak with them, they don't feel like they're playing small as much. Mm. And I'm curious, like, you know, when you do surveys and you research, like really defining what playing small means to each culture so that we can all redefine it.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, and a lot of times our playing small has cultural dimensions, right, that are specific maybe to our national culture, maybe to our ethnic group, even to our religious group. So that can manifest as, you know, based on what our particular cultural norms are, we've all internalized different ideas of what it means to be a good woman, what it means to be a good mother, what it means to be a good wife, what it means to be, you know, whatever. We've also internalized different negative stereotypes. Oh, I don't want to be the, you know, the angry black woman, or I don't want to be the meek Asian woman, right? Whatever. So those all inform like the mix of how our inner critic talks to us, what we're trying to avoid, where we end up playing small, all that stuff.
So when you're talking about your book, which I just love, and I've got all these marks, and I'm going to ask you about a few quotes because I just love them. But what do you, can you just tell us from the horse's mouth what women will find in this book? Because I love it. I read it. I embraced it. What I love is it's not just a reading of like your story, which is wonderful. it's exercises, it's ideas. It makes you think. It also isn't one of those books that if I put down and I pick back up, I can't reconnect to, which I love. I can just totally like, I really need to feel big today, you know, and I'll open the book.
Well, so these are, so after I was coaching women, after I got those survey results, I started really focusing on what helped women play bigger. And my coaching practice was like an experimental laboratory. Okay, did that work? Well, that worked, but it only worked for 15% of women. Okay, it's out. Did that work? It worked, but mediocre. So what I kept, you know, after all that time in the trenches was what were the ideas and, as you're saying, the practices and exercises that made a dramatic difference for a wide diversity of women and did that consistently for women, whether they were 20 or 60, whether they worked in nonprofit sector or business. And then I created a course for that. And now 1,000 women have been through the course.
That's right.
I've read through hundreds of evaluations of each part. So what's in the book is kind of like the best of the best of what really makes a difference for us in helping us play big. And play big is totally, each woman is defining that on her own terms, right? So we know that sinking sense of we're playing small, same thing. We kind of know usually with some level of vagueness, but we kind of know what playing big would mean for us. Oh, it would mean I'm doing my art again. It would mean I'm speaking up more. It would mean I'm exploring starting that business, whatever. So it's whatever playing big means for you. This is the toolkit for doing the inner work so that you get unstuck. A lot of the training that's out there for women is the tactical stuff, like, oh, here's how to write a business plan here. Well, we all know it's kind of like diet information. The information's out there. We're not confused really about like that part, but there's inner stuff that gets in our way. And the same thing is true with our playing big. So this is the underlying work to free you up to play much, much bigger in however you want to play big.
I have so many questions. Okay. The first thing I want to ask about the book is I don't even think this is in the book, but you just brought this up about the inner wisdom. And I think why I'm so drawn to you is because I was raised by intellects. My parents were they both have their PhDs in psychology and education. And I kind of rebelled against intellectualism because of that and went into more spirit and wisdom from the inner knowledge. And you wrote, I've spent much of my life learning to navigate both worlds simultaneously, to fill my mind with education, but not let information eclipse inner wisdom, to use the mind, but not allow it to trample the heart. This so speaks to me because it's true to my heart, what you said. And when you talked about your book, do you feel like your book is that? It's a little bit of, it's both.
I hope so. I think, you know, it's something that it's interesting how in my life growing up, especially, it often felt very polarized. Like, okay, like I'm, you know, like going to the New Age bookstore in my free time, but then I'm like getting an Ivy League education and these two worlds don't meet. It always felt like a conflict. But now in my work, people will be like, what I love about it is you have the intellectual side and the spiritual side. So it's it's great that I think that's true for a lot of us, the things that were uncomfortable splits in childhood, mm-hmm. if we can find a way they become our unique thing that we have a mix of them in adulthood. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
So when we're going on page 230, you talked about setting gift goals, not should goals. And I don't know why, I just love it. It just stood out because, like, for example, I'm trying to lose a bunch of weight right now because I gained weight ever since I started Women for One. I put on like 20 pounds and I'm like, and I read that book. It was so practical to me because it was like gift goals compared to should goals are like night and day, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So even just saying I'm trying to lose a bunch of weight right now, that already sounds like a should.
Right.
Me? Right.
I know. I'm working it. I didn't, you know, yeah. I just read
it. So if you were to re-articulate, what is that goal if we were putting it in language that would truly feel like a gift to yourself?
I want to feel healthy and positive and vibrant about my life every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to feel... So
I learned.
Positive and alert?
No, I learned from your book.
Yeah. Yeah, so to feel healthy and positive and vibrant, that's a gift goal, right? And then our egos can twist it around and do weird things, and that becomes a should, like, I need to lose the weight. What's also cool about a gift goal is usually it's something you can practice much more in the present, right? So you can fully complete that goal today, right, by some choices you make today.
Just the present day, I'm going to make this choice for this day instead of going, in a month, I want to fit into that dress.
Right.
Okay. That's a hard one for me to let go of, but...
You don't have to let go of it, but we can just look at... Because also letting go can become... That could become a should, right? So...
All right.
More like, okay, what is actually... how does it serve me? Does it make me feel good to think about that or not?
Right, right. And that actually dovetails into the next quote I had, or just the piece on page 236. You talk about compassionately, which I love at Women for One, compassionately investigating when you get stuck in an issue of conflict. Can you talk about compassion compared to another way we do that other than the shoulds?
Right. Well, and this whole chapter that you're pointing to is called Let It Be Easy. And it's all about the idea. It's like the provocative idea that maybe doing this playing bigger work could set that up for ourselves in a way that would make it feel easy. Like, what if your biggest goal, what if writing the book actually could feel easy all the way?
I would love it.
Right. And what if we could think about that as like, you're asking yourself, okay, honey, what are all the things I could put in place for you that are going to let this book writing truly happen? Like, what's going to make that truly doable? And what's going to make it happen like water falling downhill, instead of like, oh, I'm going to climb uphill somehow with my grand will and self-discipline. And if you ask yourself, well, what would make it easy? You know, you start thinking about things like, oh, well, I need, you know, maybe I need a writing buddy, or maybe I mm-hmm. need to like cut this other crap outside of my schedule. Or out of my schedule. Maybe I need a special place I'm going to, you know, whatever comes up that's like the support. So it's not the shoulds, but the actual life rituals and practices and supports that make it doable. And then when you get stuck, really the only sane thing to do when we get stuck is to be like, what made that happen? You know, with curiosity, like there's no judgment, there's no moralizing. It's sort of like, you know, if the car ran out of gas, it won't go. And we can be like, car, how, you know, you ran out of gas. Or we can be like, what happened? Oh, the car ran out of gas. It needs more gas. So when we get stuck, it's like, what happened?
Be curious and get some awareness around it, right?
Yeah, get some awareness, figure out the answer to the question, and then give yourself the support you need to get back on track.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I'm hoping that will help our community as well, because you can apply that to anything that you're wanting to accomplish in your life, anything. Then if it's just, I keep saying every day, if it's, you know, because Women for One just evolved easily. I allowed for it and I was curious and I loved it and I just rode the wave of it. Yet this will of, I have to write a book or this, what, you know, it doesn't work for me. It's, you know, following what needs to happen.
Yeah. And in the book I talk about, you know, this whole idea that self-discipline is a concept that somebody made up. It's not grounded in any research. There's no psychological or neurological research to support the idea that some part of us can discipline the rest. There's absolutely no basis for that. Discipline is like, the root word is disciple. It's about a teacher and student relationship, right? And then someone was like, oh, here's a cool concept. We can self-discipline. Teacher and student, you know, boss and subordinate inside ourselves. But there's no basis for that idea. And ask around. See if you know anyone who's like, I have awesome self-discipline and it allows me to accomplish everything I've
ever wanted. Right.
Nobody says that, because we're set up to fail when we're relying on self-discipline. So we need to find other structures and tools that allow us to take consistent action.
And your book really helps with that, no matter what it is, no matter what.
Thanks.
I love that. So I want to ask you just a random question. What is the best piece of advice anybody's ever given you? I ask people that.
Piece of advice. It's not exactly a piece of advice.
Or
but,
wisdom.
The what always comes up for me, I love Marianne Williamson's question of how can I be the representative of love in the room? And I ask myself that all the time. I remember it all the time. So that for me is a real touchstone.
So when you define love, you don't just mean all love and light, do you?
I mean, like, whatever that to me, it's like the capital L love, force of love. It's not, you know, a people-pleasing pushover. It's not that. But it's like grand love. Yeah. And I find that, you know, whenever I ask myself that, I kind of can pull myself out of whatever my ego or my fears may be getting caught up in the situation and really come from a higher place.
Thank you for that. Thank you. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was your 10 brilliant rules. When you come onto your site, when our community signs up at Tarmore, which we will have your book and also this interview as well on our homepage, when they come, can you tell them what they get? Because I love the 10 brilliant rules.
So 10 rules for brilliant women.
10 rules for brilliant women, yeah.
Yeah, 10 rules for brilliant women. I sat down and wrote this a while ago, thinking about those initial women that I was talking about earlier, these brilliant women who couldn't see their brilliance, who were coming into my coaching practice. And one day, after months of coaching them, I'm just like, this is what I want them to know. And it took like 10 minutes. Talk about how sometimes the most important things are with ease, right? So 10 minutes. I'm like, okay, I'm going to send this to Huffington. I was blogging at Huffington Post at the time. I'm going to send it to Huffington Post. And I was really scared to publish it, which was unusual for me. So I knew like there was something very like real in it that was scaring me. And I published it and it just went completely viral globally, continues to be. So when people visit my site, they'll see the 10 rules, and then they can also sign up to get a free workbook that takes you through
how to
apply the rules in your life.
I printed it out. I read it.
Oh, that's great.
That's exciting. So what else can our community sign up for and to get, other than your book and this, the 10 brilliant rules for women, or 10 rules for brilliant women. I've got to say it. Okay. What else can we get if we go to your site?
So I blog regularly. So when you sign up, you'll start to get inspiration and articles and on a regular basis to your inbox. And then the next session of the Playing Big program is coming up. And for the first time this year, we're also going to be doing a special training for coaches, social workers, therapists, other professionals who work one-on-one with women or work with women in groups who want to learn the Playing Big model and start to use it in their practice. So that's really exciting too. So both the regular Playing Big course, and if you want to start to help women play bigger, a model to help you do that.
Do you have to have taken the regular Playing Big to move on to the next course?
You have both at once if you sign up for that.
Wow, that's exciting. And when does that start? Is it an ongoing thing?
Late April.
Great. Well, I want to sign up. Even though I don't coach, I would love to do that.
Yeah,
that would be.
Yeah, well, you're doing that through your work in your own way.
Yes, so that would be great. So thank you so much for everything today and all your wisdom and your service to the world. It's just such an honor to know you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing and letting me be the number one on the relaunch. That's so exciting.
It's very exciting. Playing Big. Everybody go get it because you need it. I need it. I'm going to keep reading it. It's like last year it was Finding Your Soul Signature by Panache, and this year it's Playing Big. So I'm moving forward as well. So thank you so much, Tara. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Take care.